Are you seeking fulfillment for your life? Do you want freedom from fear? That's why we're here. Welcome to Jesus 101, introducing you to the real Jesus. And now, here's your host, Elizabeth Talbot, with Mike Tucker.
I'm Mike Tucker.
And I'm Elizabeth Talbot.
So in your garage, there's a bronze snake, and that this is a visual aid that you would use for preaching. And tell me about this. Come on.
Well, actually, I have a regular snake. It's a rubber snake.
A rubber snake. We're not talking about a real snake.
It's actually a visual aid that I use for all kinds of sermons where there are snakes involved. And mm-hmm. It's actually a very real-looking snake. Mm-hmm. And my husband was preaching a sermon in a church last weekend, and he actually was preaching on a story we're going to start with today, and that has a bronze snake, and he took a spray of bronze, and when I get to my garage, I find this metal-looking snake, and I go, where did this come from? And then I realize it was my snake that he had painted. And this story that he was preaching on was the book of Numbers, and you might remember this story. Actually, it's a very interesting story of a time when Israel is attacked by all these venomous snakes because they had been grumbling against the Lord and they think the Lord is not with them. And then the Lord says, okay, you want to see what that would look like? And all of a sudden, all these snakes come to them. And
they are in the wilderness. I mean, you know, there are snakes there, but this is a plague.
Yeah, this is an infestation, and they're venomous, and they start all dying. Chapter 21 and starts on verse 4 and 5 and 6 and 7. And God says, okay, take a bronze snake and put it on a pole, and then whoever believes that this antidote comes from me and has faith in this ridiculous antidote, mm-hmm. They will be saved.
Basically,
and they will live.
If they would look at that snake, if they just cast their gaze upon it, then they were saved and they would live.
Yes, and Jesus eventually in the New Testament uses this story to talk about himself. When mm-hmm. he's talking to Nicodemus in John chapter 3, he says, you know, as Moses lifted up the serpent in the desert, so I need to be lifted up mm-hmm. so that whoever sees me will live. Well, he was preaching the sermon, and so he painted the snake. And actually, this is a good help for us because this was such a great symbol of God's healing power at that time.
This was an item of to spark faith in the one who heals you, and so it was a very good tool. But yet that same tool became an instrument of
idolatry
at one point.
And this is a lot of people don't know this story. Hundreds of years go by, and when Hezekiah is the king of Judah in 2 Kings chapter 18, he comes back to the Lord because they had left the Lord for a long time, the southern kingdom of Judah. And one of the first things he does, let me read it to you on 2 Kings chapter 18, verse 4. He removed the high places and broke down the sacred pillars and cut down the Asherahs. And he also broke in pieces the bronze serpent that Moses had made. And you're like, what's wrong with this guy? And then it says, why? For until those days, the sons of Israel burned incense to it.
Yeah, so even a positive symbol, something that had been used for the healing of Israel, was now turned to an object of idolatry. And so in order to avoid that, he destroyed this object of idolatry. And we're going to find that we're talking about idolatry today, and we've got a story in Exodus chapter 32 and forward that helps us understand a little bit about this, and then an application of that from Acts about the story of idolatry.
We want to think together with you that when God said no other gods, sometimes we think, oh, this is only idols, made of metal. But sometimes idolatry is also on symbols of God that we come to worship instead of God.
And not only just symbols of God, but anything, I think, that we elevate to a position of authority over God or higher mm-hmm. than God. And let's take a look now at Exodus chapter 32, beginning with verse 1. Now when the people saw that Moses delayed to come down from the mountain, remember he's up there receiving not just the Ten Commandments, but instructions on how to build the sanctuary and a variety of other things, the people assembled about Aaron and said to him, come make us a God who will go before us. As for this Moses, the man who brought us up from the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. Aaron said to them, tear off the gold rings which are in the ears of your wives, your sons, and your daughters, and bring them to me. Then all the people tore off the gold rings which were in their ears and brought them to Aaron. He took this from their hand and fashioned it with a graving tool and made it into a molten calf. And they said, "This is your God, O Israel, who brought you up from the land of Egypt."
Now, how sad is this? I mean, this is one of the great detours of the people of Israel in the beginning of their journey with God. This is Aaron, who about two chapters ago, we heard that he and his family were the ones that were anointed to be the priests of the Lord.
And he stood by Moses as God rained down the plagues upon Egypt, and he saw the great deliverance of God of his people from this mighty nation. He witnessed all of those things. He spoke on Moses' behalf because he could speak without stuttering, something mm-hmm. which I struggle with at times, you know? he was able to do all of these things, and yet here, all of a sudden, because a little pressure comes from these people, mm-hmm. he creates this object of idolatry, something which he even lied to Moses about later when yes. Moses came down from the mountain. He said, "I just threw this stuff in the fire. Look what popped out." Yes. Hello, come on. At least come up with a better argument yeah. than this, a better lie.
And you know, it's interesting because this happened at the moment where Moses had gone to speak with God. Many days had gone by, and people lost their faith. Mm-hmm. Maybe Moses was dead, and maybe God didn't exist after all. And mm-hmm. so they create this idol because they want to see. Sometimes people have a hard time walking by faith versus by sight. They said, "No, we need a God." Don't forget that this is what they had learned in the Egyptian culture. And for me, it's very important to understand that in moments of stress or anxiety, we usually fall into what is familiar to us versus what is healthy.
You have seen that, and I have seen it as we counsel people who have fallen into codependency and other unhealthy ways of living. You finally help them understand there's a better way of life. They pull out of it, but when things get stressful, they fall back to the familiar rather than to the new healthy pattern of life. We always go back to the familiar.
Over the healthy. And yeah. sometimes it happens in family systems. You say, "Well, I'm never going to do what my parents did." And one day you find yourself sounding exactly
like it.
And you're like, "Whoops, what happened to me?" Well, that was your familiar place. Yeah. And even though if you're trying to get healthier, sometimes in stressful times, we fall into the familiar versus the healthy.
I tell you when that really happens, and you haven't really had this experience, and that is when you're raising your children, all of a sudden you hear a voice come out of you, and you realize it's your father's voice. You yeah. know? That's just something that just, you know, sends chills up and down my back. But the truth is, we all follow those same patterns.
Yes, and here they fall into idolatry. You know, we follow the story of Israel, and this was such a terrible thing that happened to them back in the desert, and then it happened to them again when they get to the Promised Land, and their kings start following mm-hmm. idols again, and they get again into exile, which is another Egypt for them. They go all the way to Assyria and Babylon, and when they're in this exile, they decide that if God ever brings them back, they're never going to fall in idolatry again. So when they come back, we have what we call the Second Temple Judaism. When they decide they're going to follow the law so strictly, mm-hmm. and they're going to only observe the temple and know the laws, the 613 laws, and they will always be with God. And then they become religious idolaters, mm-hmm. which is very strange, isn't it?
Oh, it is very strange, but it's something that we see happening today. We become idolaters of a place of worship. We become idolaters of a form of worship. We worship the order of service that we have in church or a particular religious teacher. We just think that, you know, this is the person mm-hmm. who knows it all. So we
particular preacher?
Yes, that's yeah. right. So we are become guilty of religious idolatry. And we find a story in the book of Acts where these religious leaders are accused of religious idolatry by Stephen.
Yes, Stephen is the person that will be the first martyr in the Christian church. He will be put to death on chapter 7. And he does this whole sermon talking about the story of Israel, the history of Israel, and makes a very interesting accusation. So we can start on verse 40.
Verse 40, and here he's talking about all this. He says, "Saying to Aaron, 'Make for us gods who will go before us, for this Moses who led us out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what happened to him.'" And we remember this is almost a direct quote from what we just read.
It is a direct quote, yeah.
"And at that time they made a calf and brought a sacrifice to the idol and rejoicing in the works of their hands, but God turned away and delivered them up to serve the host of heaven, as it was written in the book of the prophets, it was not to me that you offered victims and sacrifices for 40 years in the wilderness. Was it, O house of Israel? You also took along the tabernacle of Moloch and the star of the god of Rompha. And on it goes here.
Yeah, here we're talking about religious, regular idolatry.
Yeah.
And then Stephen turns to the Pharisees that are accusing him of blasphemy, and then eventually they stone him. And he turns to them on verse 51 and says, "And you," and now he's talking to the Pharisees,
right,
"you men who are stiff-necked and uncircumcised in heart and ears are always resisting this Holy Spirit, and you're doing just as your fathers did." Now, here the fathers in the wilderness have real idols.
Mm-hmm.
And then Stephen will go on to say, but you guys are trusting in the temple, and you also have real idols, but they're religious idols, and you think you're better, but you're doing just as your fathers did in the desert.
They had made an idol of the temple, an idol of the law, an idol of their ability to keep the law. They had made an idol of their own works and their own religiosity, an idol of the forms of worship. The truth is that we can make idols of anything.
And today, go ahead.
There's only one who is to be worshipped and to praise, and that is Jesus Christ.
And that's what we want to invite you to do, to become single-minded for Jesus Christ, so that that will guide you to the way you worship and who you worship.
Thank you for joining us today on Jesus 101. For more insights and resources, connect with us at Jesus101.tv. That's Jesus101.tv. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Jesus101Institute and follow us on Twitter at Jesus101Media. Until next time, live free.
Woohoo!